Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Spectacular Show! This week, actor and podcaster, Brett Fulton! And everyone's favorite environmental scourge, Crazy Strong! And your host, John O'Connor!
Thank you! Thank you.
Too kind.
Welcome back to Spectacular Show, everybody.
We are so glad to be back, and just in time, big news this week. This week only, Snoop Dogg and Dunkin' are selling a new breakfast sandwich. Yeah. It's called the Beyond D-O-double-G sandwich, which consists of a plant-based sausage patty, egg and cheese, served on a sliced, blazed donut. I said blazed. It is a glazed donut. That wasn't obvious. Other news this week out of Alaska. An Anchorage dentist was convicted on 46 counts of felony and misdemeanor charges after video surfaced of him extracting a patient's tooth while riding on a hoverboard. If you're having your tooth pulled, you may want to feel like you're floating, but I don't want my dentist to feel like they're floating. I want my dentist anchored to the floor. All right, Anchorage? Anchored and anchored, baby. I mean, if you need a better angle, use that little mirror they give. After a 15-month absence, UFC fighter Conor McGregor returned to the octagon this past weekend, defeating Donald Cowboy Cerrone by technical knockout in just 40 seconds. Yeah. In other news, I recently returned to the gym after a 15-month absence and was also knocked out in 40 seconds. Hear about this? A former Drexel University professor is facing criminal charges after he allegedly stole $185,000 worth of research grant money and subsequently used it for meals, iTunes purchases, and at adult entertainment venues. That's a lot of ones. Apparently, when he was audited, he had a few purchases with no receipt, quote unquote, in the ledger and tried to pass off the strip club expenses as catering and food costs. Hey, Professor, what's the spread like over at the Fuzzy Peach? Musty. Folks, we ain't musty,
and we ain't dusty, because we're back, baby. We are back, and we have a great show for you tonight. Great guests. Our first guest, actor and co-host of the podcast, Movies in the Buff, Brett Bolton is here. And he's the scourge of the environment, but we love him. We love him anyway. Crazy Straw is here. Now, while I triple axle my way over to the desk, please, our spectacular show listeners, our spectacular squadron, please listen to our dear friend Synthbot and like, rate, and subscribe to the show. Synthbot, we missed you, buddy. Take it away. My first guest is an actor and podcaster who is the co-host of the podcast Movies in the Buff. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Brett Bolton, everybody! Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Glad you could make it.
Yes, I'm glad I could make it too. It's almost like there's a quid pro quo.
Almost. Nonetheless, here we are. I'm glad I could finally have you on.
Yeah.
I've been on Movies in the Buff a couple of times.
Yeah.
A couple of times to fill in for you.
Yeah, you took over for me when I moved last March, and you were on our infamous Muppet Christmas Carol episode.
Infamous. Go ahead, tell everybody.
Well, we thought it'd be a great idea to, you know, John Dreyer and I host this podcast, and we thought it'd be a great idea to bring in a guest host for the Christmas holidays, spread the merry cheer. You know, you and I, we work together, and John works together with us too. That's going to be
John's been on a couple times on Spectacular Show.
Right, that's going to be confusing. But yeah, we had you on, and we're like, let's do like one of a Christmas movie from the 90s that we all like watched as kids, right? And we're like, I love Muppet Christmas Carol. Like, that'll be perfect. Like, it's 90 minutes. It's short. It's the Muppets. It's funny, but it's also Charles Dickens. So there's going to be a little bit of meat to it. And, well, I decided that it would be a great idea. You know, John and I have this thing where we drink whiskey during every episode. And in this particular episode, I decided to make Irish coffees. Well, I made the first round of Irish coffees, and we hadn't even started recording yet.
Right.
And then I made the second round of Irish coffees, and then we started recording. And then we were also drinking whiskey during the pod, and then also had some beers.
Yeah.
And then at some juncture, you just stood up and left the table and said, "Do you guys want a beer?" And we're like, "Oh, sure. You know, we're 45 minutes in. Let's have another beer." And you came back with six beers.
And then I was like, "What do you guys want?"
And then, and the rest is history. I found you with a pizza later.
Yeah, it was very deceptive because at the time I was working overnights.
Yeah,
so I woke
of course
up maybe 2 hours before that.
Yeah.
Had not eaten anything.
Right.
And then headed to your place. And when I got there, you guys were still recording a different episode.
Right, because we double up on some of our recording days.
So I sat down and just started drinking a beer, and it wasn't very long, maybe half hour max that I waited, but sure enough, cut to Brett, what was it, like Jim Beam White or something I never even heard of, for you were making the Irish coffees with?
Oh, maybe, oh no, it was Bushmills.
Bushmills.
We were making it with Bushmills.
Double Irish
doubles,
coffees,
yeah.
And he didn't tell me about that. I will still say I stand by the first 55 minutes of that episode.
Of course. The episode itself is still under 2 hours. We recorded over three.
And that last hour, for certain, there was no way I was very coherent.
Well, none of us were. We've all been there. Like
me more than you, though.
Well, okay, maybe. But like Dreyer and I recorded an episode the other week, and I just listened back to it because I'm editing it. And I was listening back to it, and I'm like, oh man, shut up, stop talking, Brett, stop talking. I'm gonna end up cutting like 35 minutes out of the podcast.
That's what I was like listening to Muppet Christmas Carol, the one you released. Because at the end, I'm just cutting off. For the last 35 minutes, I just cut you guys off every time you speak. I felt so bad about it.
I know. I can't.
Anyway, I stand by it. Go download Movies in the Buff and download Muppet Christmas Carol. It was a fun episode. And for if you don't listen to the last 25 minutes,
we'll
I won't be
you.
Annoying. If you do listen to the last 25 minutes, I'll apologize in advance.
Yeah.
But it's a fun episode.
No, it's a fun episode. I like that movie a lot.
We had a great time.
Certainly.
So, of course, Movies in the Buff, we've already spoken about it a little bit here, but you're the co-host.
Yep.
Now, why don't you just give us a little bit of background? This is your first podcast.
Yes. Yes.
It's your first podcast, and how did this happen? Was it just because of John Dreyer? Were you interested in doing a podcast anyway? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, John approached me in his first season he was having guest hosts do certain episodes, and he came to me and he's like, hey, I really think it'd be a great idea if you came on and like did a month. I think it'd be really fun to stick with one host through the course of a month. I was like, that sounds like an awesome deal. So I start, you know, quote unquote signed on part time, and we got to talking. We're like, what if we actually did like 3 months? And so we did 3 months at the end of his first season. And John and I go way back. We went to graduate school together. We now work together. We're good friends. We've known each other for going on 10 years now. 10 years. And you know, we're both big sports fans and big movie people. And we're like, this seems like an obvious fit. And so it just kind of evolved from there. He kind of asked me what I wanted to do. And he had proposed this idea of like, I really like this idea of, you know, doing 4 sports movies, then doing a month of not sports movies, and then doing another month of sports movies, kind of like a halftime, like a, you know, first half, halftime, second half. I was like, that sounds like a great idea. We, proposed some movies and whatnot. We finally agreed on the set. And then in the middle it was May. So we're like, let's take advantage of the Mother's Day thing. And so we did a Movies Our Mother's Love, and we took movies that that my mother and Sydney's mother, who's my partner, and John and his mom and Sabrina at the time, which was his girlfriend and her mom, and then TJ, who was the original host of the podcast, but who had to back out just for time commitment reasons, and his mom's movie, and then we did like, you know, 13 episodes in 3 months, and then John asked me to come on full time, and we did a full season last year, and now we're in the midst of our second season.
Yes, and you guys typically, the way the podcast goes, because I listen almost every week, if I have not seen the movie, I almost never listen because I want to see the movie before I listen, obviously.
As is reasonable.
But for the most part...
not required.
Of course, not required. I basically every week I listen to it, and you guys have a format where you do 2 episodes a week.
Right.
One is about a movie, the second is about... And it's switched up a little this season.
Yeah.
You guys do it in seasons. This season you've switched it up where you call it the storyboard.
Right. Since I started, it has been called the storyboard. But the progeny of the idea was on Mondays we do like really deep dives. So the structure of the podcast is we pick a theme or an actor or a director.
For the month.
And we pick movies subsection. So it, you know, we did a Kate Winslet month, and we did a Robin Williams month, and we've done sports movies month, and we've done
Tarantino
and Tim Burton, and you know, in January we're going to be doing westerns, and this past month in November we did Scorsese, and now we're doing Christmas movies. So we do those, and then we pick a set of movies, and we how do I want to phrase this? Because like we don't review them because that's not what we do. We just kind of like shoot the shit about it. We talk about it. Like he and I are both big movie buffs. Hence the double entendre. Doesn't matter.
Get it?
Get it? Can I hit you over the head with this mic? Yeah, and so we just kind of like talk about how we watch the movie and what we get from it, not necessarily in a review aspect. But yes, on the Thursdays, we release what we call the storyboard, which this year is we do a little bit of like movie news, just keeping our fingers on the pulse of like what's coming out that we're excited about, stupid things that we're like, how is this getting made? We preview the next week's show, but the main part of the of that podcast is with this, you know, what is called the streaming wars right now. We try to pick a movie or a television series or something that that is on a streaming service and say and recommend it. And so it's, you know, it's a quick 25-minute type episode. John and I each recommend something. Often it's something that we've been watching recently. So like this past week, you know, I talked about Mike Birbiglia's new special that it was out on Netflix.
I still want to see that really.
It's really awesome.
He's a good comedian.
He's and his comedy has evolved in such a way that's like it's beyond his, like Thank God for Jokes is a stand-up show.
Yes.
You know? And now he's much more in like the John Leguizamo like one man show territory.
Sure. Yeah.
Where it really is following a narrative arc in each of his shows.
That's usually my favorite type.
Yeah, you get the most out of it. It's you can really play with structure in a way that's really rewarding for the audience.
Right. So you do that in terms of the storyboards, you do those on
Thursdays.
Which is smart. Gives yeah. people a chance for the weekend.
Yeah.
A little recommendation if they want to check
That's
something out.
That's the idea.
So you've been doing Movies in the Buff for how long now?
I started, so it's now 2019, 18. I started in the spring of 2018.
Okay. So it's been almost 2 years, year and a half.
Yeah.
Okay. And in terms of this podcast, this is a great platform for you to discuss movies, to discuss whatever you want to talk about it, directing, themes, cinematography.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite either themes to talk about, movies you've, you know, spoken about, just whatever you feel like you would want to – if you had to say to somebody, here's the best episode of Movies in the Buff I would recommend going to listen to because.
Gotcha. I will plug a specific episode.
Sure.
And it happens to be one of my first episodes on the podcast. And it's partly because John and I agreed on the movie because it's a movie that very much fits who I am as a human being. And that's Moneyball. Bennett Miller directed that. Brad Pitt plays Billy Bean, mm-hmm. running the Oakland Athletics in their win streak in the early 2000s. Covers that. Jonah Hill is in it. And it's really about the start of Sabermetrics. And it sounds boring on its face, but it's like, it is such an entertaining and delightful movie. And I'm a huge baseball guy. Follow it rigorously. And not just my team. I follow the whole league. And so that episode, we really got into because it was kind of my introduction to the podcast too. And so was similar to this where John's like, so why do you like this movie? And I was like, well, I like it for all of these reasons. Not only does it deal with subject matter that I really like, but I really think it's a really well-constructed story. And I think that, you know, I think Brad Pitt's an excellent actor in it. And I think Jonah Hill's a really good actor in it. I think Philip Seymour Hoffman's really great in it. And so I think I had that's where you really feel who I am as a movie watcher the most. And a little bit of it is like just being fresh to it. Like I was kind of nervous and was really overprepared. And
you?
What? Never. I didn't have my typed and organized notes by segment.
He has a calculator right now.
Always.
There's no math.
I just hold it in my hand. Yeah, but for me, you know, my background is in acting. I'm a trained. I have, you know, I have a classical training in acting. I have an MFA, and so acting is where I get the most from movies most often, in terms of like an emotional or visceral response. And so, yeah, I would say that's where my conversations mostly are geared. Though I feel like I have a pretty good eye for directorial flourish as well. And then I'm also becoming more and more in tune with writing choices, which is something that this podcast has really helped me like pay attention to, because I'm like, why does this feel sluggish? Oh, because the writing is really clunky. Like, or, you know, how did we manage to jump 15 years in this movie in one scene? It's because, oh, that was really economical but well thought out screenwriting.
So you have an MFA in acting. You're classically trained.
Yes.
Now, we spoke just briefly. Obviously, I know you. I work with you. We're friends.
Yeah.
But just before the podcast, you said you are kind of done acting.
Yeah, I don't know if it's done. I'm
or you
not,
just haven't been, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not pursuing it right now.
Okay. I'm curious, because I've been in very much the same space with stand-up.
Yeah.
Is there a reason, or did it just happen?
It's a little bit of both. Like, it kind of just happened in that I was really struggling for a while. Like, I was booking some stuff, but it was really low-paying, and I was struggling to pay bills, and, like, as, you know, every month that passed by, you're getting older, and you're like, oh my gosh, like, I can't keep, like, waiting tables and also trying to audition and rehearse at night and, like, do this for the rest of my life. This is terrible. I'm miserable. So that was a lot of it. But so it kind of, yeah, I just felt myself swerving away from it. I was in too many audition rooms where I left feeling bad about myself for nothing that I had done.
Yeah.
Where you walk into an audition room and you feel like you give a good audition and you might even know somebody in the room and then they're just like, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
And it's just that like cold wall, invisible, like this invisible wall that exists between auditionee and auditioner, is really terrible and makes you feel bad about yourself unless you really start booking consistently. Which I wasn't. You know, I was booking some stuff, but really, really small stuff that was not very rewarding. You know, making $100 a day here or in a, you know, a small show here or whatever. And like, there were a couple projects that I did after I moved to New York that were worthwhile. But for the most part, I've come to value the stability that having a full-time job has.
Yeah.
While also maintaining like some degree of flexibility. Like I could still theoretically be acting even now as I hold this job. I'm just choosing not to because I really like having free time.
It is nice.
And I enjoy not stressing about that kind of stuff. And it's not that I will never go back, but right now where I am in my life in my early 30s, like there aren't also like a ton of interesting that people aren't making a lot of interesting plays or movies that I have access to. Like it, the hustle is really, really tough. And it's so luck based that, I just, it felt very defeatist, being in that world. And some people are, and this is not to like begrudge anybody that's like, oh, you just got to work harder, because some people are just wired that way, that they can keep up the getting denied all the time. They can keep up the hustle. They can pound the pavement. But it just wasn't something that was bringing me any joy. So I've put it on pause for a little while.
I am amazed by actors in the sense that, like, as a stand-up comic, you can go to a club. You could bomb. But if you're a stand-up and you go to a club, typically either you talked your way into a an audition. Let me do a guest spot. Now, if the club owner slash booker is there, great. But if they're not there, it means nothing.
Right.
No matter how hard you kill, it means nothing. You're not going to get booked.
Nope.
I've had that happen where I've had comics that I knew on the 8 o'clock show. And then I was on the 10 o'clock show. And the owner was like, do you guys know this guy, John? And they were like, oh, yeah, John's great. Yeah. And I said, okay. And they said, all right, I'll watch him. But then they left.
Ugh.
And then I did great. And then I thought, all right, great. Now I could, I'll get booked at this club. But no, because the person that needed to see me left. They didn't stay for the show.
Right.
And it could also go the other way, where the crowd – I'm very much of the – as a comedian, of the standpoint of I have no problem – I don't want to bomb, but I have no problem bombing. If an audience doesn't like me, it used to be a real blow to my ego, where yeah. now it's like, well, either you screwed up or you weren't their flavor. Yeah, the best comedians in the world can crush in almost any room. I'm not denying that, but I'm not one of the best comedians in the world. But for the most part, I never blame the crowd. I have been on – I used to when I was younger.
Sure.
But I have been on shows where the crowd is awful and they sure. don't like any of the comedians. And I'm fine if you don't like me. But if you don't like anybody on the show, it's like, what did you want? What did you come out to see tonight?
Man.
Nobody on the show, men and women, races, creeds, colors, religions, sexuality, you name it. Fruit salad, spread, every flavor, every type, every sweet, sour, tart, salty, whatever you got.
Yeah.
Nobody. This right. this room of people tonight liked nobody.
Yeah.
I don't – that doesn't fly with me.
No.
So it's a little bit of a different world with stand-up. But what amazes me about being an actor is you can walk into an audition. You can crush that audition, and it means nothing.
Absolutely.
Because they might go, that was amazing, but it's just not going to fit with what we need.
But you know what? The person that we cast in the role opposite you is 5'1".
Yes. So I'm always amazed by that. But at the same time, I think it must be, and I'm not an actor, but I feel like I've only, when I say I'm not an actor, I have acted, but in little teeny tiny things
sure.
that someone was like, could you do this thing for me?
Yeah.
I imagine it. Maybe that element of it, of where like, well, it doesn't really matter how I do. I mean, it does and it doesn't. Is that liberating in a way?
Yeah, yes, it can be, but you really have to be in the right headspace. And it also really depends on who's in the room. Like, if I go, there are a couple casting directors. I won't give names because I won't give names because that feels a little weird. But there are a couple casting directors where, yeah, I know them pretty well. I feel pretty comfortable going into their rooms. You know, they've brought me in a handful of different times. And so, yeah, if I go in and they're like, okay, yeah, thanks, Brett. We appreciate you coming in. I'm like, all right. Wasn't what they were looking for, but it's not going to affect my professional relationship with those people. But it's almost impossible. There are so many casting directors in the city and like, you get brought in front of a casting director you've never been in before, or maybe somebody that's at a little bit of a higher tier. I remember I got brought in for a movie once, a feature film that had some really big names in it. And I walked in and like the head of the casting agency or casting, agency is there. And I was like, okay. Don't bomb this one.
Sure. Yeah.
And of course, the moment that thought comes into your head, you get tight and mm-hmm. it's just all, you're spending, this is a common adage, but I always had an acting teacher that talked about tracks. You have a certain number of tracks in your head, like an 8-track player, right? And you can only devote a certain number, that's the capacity for what you're able to consider at any given time. And if one or two or four of those tracks is worried about who's sitting on the other side of the table, that's that much space that's not worried about what you're doing.
Right.
And so it's really a mental exercise to try to get that brain space right. And I was never particularly great at that.
Sure.
Which I imagine lends itself to some of the reasons I didn't get brought back in certain rooms.
Okay. So you've done... stage work. You've done some projects. small movies or TV or whatever it may have been.
Yep.
Who were your influences or inspirations? Who were people that either you used to, that got you started, that inspired you to get moving, or people that even now you hold in a regard where you watch their work and you just go, this person is ABC because of XYZ?
Sure. In terms of inspiration, it was very fleeting for me. It was like certain moments from certain actors in certain movies, like, oh my gosh, like, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis and There Will Be Blood in this one scene, or Tom Hanks in Road to Perdition in this one scene, or, you know, I'm trying to think, like Kate Winslet in this movie in this one scene or whatever. It was rarely, in terms of inspiration in my youth when I decided to be an actor, it was rarely like one person, but more of like, oh my gosh, that feels good. Watching sure. that, or that made me feel something. And then also just, I started acting in theater really young in middle school, and I really fell in love. My favorite part of acting is being in the rehearsal room. I hate auditioning, and I don't really care about doing the play. but I really love the collaborative aspect of making something in a room with a bunch of people that are also trying to make the thing good.
Like a writer's room for a television show almost.
Yeah, and that's kind of how an acting room works, right? You get up, you memorize the lines, you work on the scene, the director's like, maybe do it this way. And you're like, all right, let's try it that way. And then you're like, nah, that didn't feel right. Can I try this? And then the other actor's like, ah, that didn't feel right. Can I try this? And then you're in a big group scene. And then everybody's like chiming in and doing that. And then the lighting director, you know, the lighting designer comes in and is like, actually, I just... because of the way that this set is designed, we can't actually have you guys all over this place. I need you to kind of stay in this area. And so that changes the dynamic. And so that kind of like back and forth and the concessions that have to be made. And then like when something works in the audition room, it's really exciting.
Yes.
And like the first time you see it work, you're like, oh, wow. That's really cool. Like, I remember I played Nick in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf in graduate school. And my acting teacher, my mentor, played George, who's the elder professor. And I played the younger professor. And, like, at the beginning of Act Two, there's a huge scene between those two people. And it was really, really cool being in that scene with Ray and just, like, figuring it out. And figuring it out, like, with my acting teacher. Not as my acting teacher. He was like, he was very good yeah. about like,
as your peer.
Right. He was very good about like, when we leave the acting classroom, I am now we're in the same theater company. We're actors in the theater company. And that was what was really cool about my program. But in terms of like actors, now that I'm not acting as much anymore, I'm much more inspired by some other actors working. And the one that immediately comes to mind is Olivia Colman, who is a British actress from, people might know her from Broadchurch. She plays opposite David Tennant. She won the Oscar last year for playing Queen Anne? Queen Anne?
You can Google it.
In Yorgos Lanthimos's The Favourite. She's in the new season of The Crown. She plays this stepmother in Fleabag. She's everywhere right now, and she's really great.
She's really great.
Yeah, and she's really... She's consistently excellent in a way that is not showy. It's not grotesque. Like, she's just very simple and rooted and real in a way that not a lot of other people are. You know, Daniel Day-Lewis can be very showy at times, very outlandish, but there are also times where it's very subdued, and he's really exquisite. The movie he'd had last year, maybe the year before, Phantom Thread, is one of my favorite movies of the past few years. Paul Thomas Anderson directed it, and he's probably my favorite working director right now, so...
It's funny because you guys did Tarantino month and Scorsese month.
Yeah.
Back to back.
Yeah.
And you talked about Inglourious Basterds.
Yep.
And you talked about Gangs of New York.
Yeah.
two of my favorite movies with two of my favorite three acting performances of all time.
Okay.
Christoph Waltz as Hans Landa.
Oh, yeah.
And Inglourious Basterds. Daniel Day-Lewis as Bill the Butcher.
Bingo.
That's a bingo. Can I have another glass of your delicious just milk?
Can I trouble you?
He.
Au revoir, Shoshana.
I loved listening. I wanted to like partake in the conversation as I was listening to it.
Sure.
I loved.
That's. I mean, that's the whole idea, right?
Right. I loved listening to you guys talk about him. I was. This is a film. I'm a sucker for anything World War II.
Sure.
Anything, and for whatever reason, especially European World War II.
Well, I mean,
more so than Pacific World War II, right? Or, I mean, of course, there was like North Africa and Italy and whatever. But that's Italy. That's Europe. I mean,
but yeah, the German, the Third Reich, and their relative invasion and the fight back against that.
I loved listening to you guys talk about him. He and I listened to you guys. I believe you spoke about how DiCaprio was initially kind of penciled in for that role.
But right.
But it never came to.
Yeah, it was.
And it probably, as much as I like Leonardo DiCaprio, he probably wouldn't have fit very well.
No, it would have been much more in the world of Calvin Candy.
Yes.
And Django.
And with Christoph Waltz, I remember reading an interview with Tarantino who said, he gave me my movie back. I didn't think this movie would get made.
Yeah.
But I loved, I mean, everybody in the movie. Everybody. There was nobody phoning it in. There was nobody where I'm like, oh, come on, this person.
Yeah.
Everybody crushed it. I thought that movie was excellent, and I thought Christoph Waltz absolutely stole the show.
Yeah. I agree, and that's in a movie where Brad Pitt is doing some of the best work of his career.
And that's the thing. You've got Brad Pitt, and he's playing second fiddle to Christoph Waltz, in my opinion.
And I want my scalps.
Yeah. Oh, man, he's got the rope burn on his neck. It was so good. I'm the direct descendant of the mountain man, Jim Bridger.
Buongiorno.
Yeah, that when he introduced that whole scene, that sequence where, you know, spoiler for anybody that's listening, what's the actress's name? She plays Bridget von Hammersmark. Kruger.
Kruger.
Diane Kruger is basically, again, spoiler alert, sneaking three Allied soldiers into a Nazi movie premiere.
Yeah.
And they have decided.
The movie's been out for 10 years. Yeah, spoiler alert.
But they've decided they're going to sneak in and pretend to be Italian. That way no one will have to speak to them.
Right.
And she introduces them all. And Brad Pitt doesn't say anything, but Eli Roth, and I forget the guy that plays the other character.
Yeah, the other.
But they both do like the Italian finger pinch.
The fingers, yeah. And the wrist wave.
Yeah. Dominic DeCoco. And he gives the eyebrow.
Margheriti.
Yeah. Hey, what the music?
Antonio Margheriti.
That was exquisite. The other, we were talking about Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
As Bill the Butcher. One of my favorite performances of all time.
Dude, it's so manic.
It is. And of course, he being an actor that is like, I have to do in-character work. I have to be in character the whole time.
Yeah.
And you guys spoke with such interesting stuff that I don't know that I ever had heard, where he refused to even wear modern clothing.
Yeah.
Did he have pneumonia?
Something like that. It was something where he needed a penicillin shot and was like, that doesn't exist.
Yeah, what's that? You know? But I loved, you know, I've seen him in a few other films, but he had that kind of, I think it's a Northeast thing. I'm from New England. Of course, we live in New York. But there's this kind of speed and cadence. And of course, this is a couple hundred years ago or 150 years ago. This movie is supposed to take place, right? That kind of tight-jawed dialect.
Yeah, well, the dialect is historically modeled after what the New York dialect would have sounded like in that era.
Right. And it's almost when he speaks, his mouth almost doesn't open. It's like his teeth are together the whole time. You know, how old are you, Amsterdam? Like, the mouth is just closed the entire time. And everything.
Amsterdam.
Yeah. I love when one of my favorite moments in the film is when, I forget, the guy that Amsterdam DiCaprio is friends with goes in to meet Bill the Butcher.
Oh, yeah.
And DiCaprio hangs back and he goes, you! And he waves him over. And when he waves him over, he goes, what's your name? And he goes, Amsterdam, sir. And he goes, Amsterdam. I'm New York.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines in any movie ever.
It's really great.
But yeah, it's a can't miss.
His monologue in that, where he has the American flag draped over his shoulders and is
recovering
telling,
from a wound.
Yeah, and telling telling Amsterdam more or less about his father and how he killed his father and how his father let him live. And so he pried out his own eye because he couldn't bear to, like, he couldn't beat him without it, without being able to see. It's incredible.
Yeah, he couldn't bear the shame.
Right.
It was this remarkable scene, and I loved it.
Yeah.
We are kind of running out of time here. So just before we go, is there anything else you would like to say? Anything else you wanted to talk about?
Plug my own shit.
Well, I usually ask people to do that so people can find them, I guess, if they're interested.
Well, yeah, we've talked extensively about Movies in the Buff. You can find that on all major streaming services. You know, we're on social. Same handle at Movies in the Buff. Twitter at Buff Movies. Though Twitter's not super active.
Sure.
Instagram's really the place to go.
For a spectacular show.
Right. we release on Mondays and Thursdays. We have a whole back catalog of tons of movies. So be sure to not just listen to the most recent one, but also go back and find your favorite.
Would you give us one movie recommendation that you think anybody that's alive should see?
Oh, man.
Just one.
Oh, gosh.
Doesn't have to be the best. Doesn't have to be your favorite. Just a movie that's a can't miss that people may not know about.
Yeah, that they may not know about.
Or that maybe they know about, but just maybe you think more people should see it.
Well, you're sitting in my living room right now. There are 400 movies around
there
you.
There is it looks like Batman's bookcase, literally. But it's all DVDs. Or a few.
Yeah. Okay, let me just run down like five from a few different directors. Catherine Bigelow's The Hurt Locker is a war movie that's set in Iraq. Came out in 2010. It won Best Picture, but didn't make a lot of money. It is it's probably the best war movie I've seen, and certainly the best contemporary war movie I've seen.
Sure.
Jeremy Renner is brilliant in it. Anthony Mackie is also in it. He is incredible. That's definitely a recommendation that not a lot of people probably have seen. Kind of on the bigger scale, you know, John and I just did a Scorsese month. If you haven't seen Goodfellas and you haven't seen The Irishman, watch Goodfellas first and then watch The Irishman, which is now on Netflix. You'll get a lot more out of it because you'll see kind of what our podcast is about, where we're like pointing out little tricks and tropes and like, look at this flourish he uses here. And then maybe let's go back way in time. Let's do Stanley Kubrick's Doctor Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb or Love the Atomic Bomb. That was a movie that, you know, came out in Cold War era with Peter Sellers. Black and white. It's a satire on the Cold War, and it is delightful. And I think that's it.
All right, Brett Bolton. Thank you so much for being here,
buddy.
I really appreciate
it. This is fun.
Brett Bolton, everybody. Take a break. We'll be right back. P.U. What is that funk? Is that from your feet?
Yeah.
Say. Do all of your houseplants wither and die every time you bust out those bunions?
Uh-huh.
Do your cats bury their faces in the litter box so they won't choke on the stench of your swamp toes?
How did you know?
Are your shoes like moist, decaying coffins?
My neighbors couldn't take it, and they all moved away.
Well, friend, have I got news for you.
You can make my feet smell better?
Ha 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 No, but we can chop them off.
What?
That's right. New from Step On It. It's the patented ankle biter.
It looks like a guillotine for legs.
Don't be silly. Those were usually quick and painless. To begin, simply place your legs into the severing slots on the frame.
I'm not sure I want to do this anymore.
Don't tell me you're getting cold feet now. That part comes later. Next, pull on the lever to activate the leg segmenter.
Oh! Oh! Oh!
Our patented design slices through bone like a laser beam through a snow cone.
Oh! It hurts.
It sure does. No more peeling sneakers off your feet like rotting bananas, friend. No more sneakers, period.
I can't stop the bleeding.
And it's reasonably priced at $79.95, so it won't cost you an arm and a... Well, it won't cost you an arm. Don't drag your feet. Act now and put your best foot forward and order the ankle biter now so you can get back on your feet. Figuratively, the ankle biter from Step On It.
Oh!
My next guest takes all of your rules and throws them right out the window. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Crazy Straw! Crazy Straw, welcome to Spectacular Show. Now, Crazy Straw, first of all, everyone loves you. When people found out you were going to be on this show, I got hundreds of tweets, emails, text messages, phone calls, letters, singing telegrams, carrier pigeons, everyone wants to know, are you a Crazy Straw or a crazy, crazy straw? Okay, so you are a crazy straw. Is your family all crazy straws? Were some of them quote-unquote regular or quote-unquote straight straws? Hang on a second. Your cousin broke the camel's back? The famous broken-backed camel. That was your cousin? Fascinating. So, Crazy Straw, are you a glass half full or glass mostly empty kind of guy? I like that. See? Positive, bubbly attitude. And that upbeat outlook connects really well with what you're working on. It's a documentary about plastic's effect on the environment. And it is aptly titled, The Last Straw. So you've screened it. And what did people think of it? There's... Crazy Straw, come on. There's no way people said it blew and sucked. Well,
I am sure looking forward to seeing it, and I bet that it's great. Well, you know what, my friend? We certainly didn't draw the short straw with you being here. Crazy straw, everybody! We'll take a break and be right back. Don't go away.
Chocolate truffles, chocolate oranges, chocolate-covered pretzels, chocolate Santas, caramel Santas, marshmallow Santas, ribbon candy, gumdrops, sugar plums, peppermints, peppermint bark, assorted hard candy, gingerbread, gingerbread houses, gingerbread townhouses, gingerbread log cabins, gingerbread condos, gingerbread split levels, gingerbread multi-family residential homes, gingerbread duplexes, gingerbread apartments, gingerbread bungalows, gingerbread tree houses, gingerbread villas, gingerbread mansions, gingerbread castles, gingerbread palaces, gingerbread cottages, gingerbread mobile homes, gingerbread houseboats, gingerbread huts, gingerbread igloos, gingerbread tents, gingerbread caves, fudge candy canes, and more. So if you're sick of all that holiday cheer lingering around and you're ready to commit to the self-denial slash delusion of a new year suddenly bringing you a work ethic you never had in the first place, which will lead you to six-pack abs and the confidence to ask out that woman you've got the hots for whose name you don't know but she smiled at you once at the office and now you spend your night trying to orchestrate a conversation with her but making sure it looks like an accident so it's not creepy or weird, then call me. I'll move that candy for you and maybe you can get sweet on something else. Merry New Year from Timothy the Elf's Christmas Candy Repo Depot.
Well, that is it for the show today. I would like to take a chance to thank my guests, Brett Bolton. And Crazy Straw. Crazy Straw. Please come on back on Thursday, where we'll have another discussion with Brett Bolton all about the classic Super Nintendo Entertainment System video game, Super Mario World. But for today, that's all for us. So on behalf of Spectacular Show, to all of you guys listening at home, our Spectacular Squadron, we love you, we miss you, we really want to kiss you. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we'll see you next time. Bye, 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 bye.
Promotional consideration is paid for by foil-covered chocolate coins. You want me to eat these? What am I, five?